Hey everybody, this is James Lindsay. You're listening to New Discourses Bullets, where I give a single short form bullet point like summary of a single topic from woke Marxism that we need to understand so we can beat it. And today I want to talk about a really big picture idea, which is the politics of compliance. In fact, Mao's politics of compliance. I did an essay on New Discourses at the beginning of March titled Mao's Politics of Compliance. I'm basically going to follow through that essay for this episode. And that essay was actually written in the hotel room immediately after I delivered remarks at the International Crisis Summit 5, which was conjoined to CPAC, but is actually separate from it. And I was invited to speak there and was trying to figure out what I wanted to say, and I wanted to talk about how the medical phenomenon that we are witnessing parallels the identity politics, parallels the political, parallels the environmental, and all of these different domains. It's all happening the same way, and that method is actually derived from Maoism. And it struck me while I waited my turn to go on stage, literally while the person before me was speaking, that I should frame this in terms of what I call now the politics of compliance, which is what I think Mao Zedong developed. And I think that what's happening in the United States is the Maoist style politics of compliance. So I want people to understand the politics of compliance. That's the point of this episode. I'm going to start, like I did in my speech at the International Crisis Summit, with a quotation from Mao Zedong, which is, "Not to have a correct political orientation is like not having a soul." So that's the key underlying premise here, that you're not really fully human. In fact, you don't even have a soul. You're not much more than an animal unless you have the correct political orientation. And the politics of compliance work that way because it generates hate against the enemy, who is soulless and therefore unhuman and therefore can be destroyed. So Mao Zedong took over China with a strategy that I think feels very unsettlingly familiar to us. And he was able to mobilize hundreds of millions of people to comply. And that's basically what he did, and they would comply very enthusiastically with his programs, which were ultimately catastrophic. And I think the adequate name for that strategy overall would be the politics of compliance. In other words, how do you run a political program to get mass compliance? I'm not going to talk about the tools that this uses, like reflexivity, which is very important. In fact, the CCP knows about reflexivity. Mao Zedong didn't, but George Soros developed that concept and brought it to the CCP in the 1980s, and they loved it. That's how they're doing everything that they're doing, is with reflexive manipulation. I'm not going to talk about that, but I want to talk about the big picture behind it, the framework in which that dynamic works. And that is the politics of compliance. So we want to understand the basic premises, the basic mechanisms of the politics of compliance, so that we can understand how these same methods are being used maliciously on us, and that they require resisting. And if we know kind of how they work, then maybe we can actually resist them effectively, which until the last couple of years we have not been able to do. We're getting much better at it now. But I want to increase that trend. And basically it boils down to a single fact, that familiarity with these tactics at least partially inoculates a person from the power of their effects, which are in fact very powerful. These are very powerful psychological and social manipulation techniques. So in general, regarding the politics of compliance strategy, there are three segments of the population that we have to consider. First, there are people who are complying, because it's the politics of compliance. Second, there are those who resist compliance, right? So you can easily picture that. Third, there are those who aren't sure what to do. Now, those exist in a sense. I mean, all of them do a little bit on a spectrum, but these really exist on a spectrum. Some lean toward compliance, some lean away from compliance, some are just kind of in the middle, some are actually kind of clueless. I did another podcast about that, talking about various dispositions in the culture war and what we can do about it. But the politics of compliance targets these three basic groups at the same time, but in different ways, and that uses a single set of tactics to target all three. Remember, there's the people who comply, the people who don't, and the people who aren't sure. Those are your three groups. That's just a simple trichotomy of the population. And the goals of the politics of compliance are very simple: to get as many people to comply as possible, and in the process, to justify the dehumanization and demonization of everyone who refuses to comply. What that will do is move people into compliance, lock them into compliance, and it will cause them to attack the people who aren't complying in a way that pushes that unsure middle more toward compliance than away from it. And like I said, Mao Zedong was the master of this technique. So Mao's politics of compliance begins by dividing the population, actually not into three, those three groups, but into two. You want it to be too reductionist to make it more powerful. And for Mao, those who complied with his edicts were called the people. They are the people. They have souls. Those who resist his programs are the enemies of the people. So you're actually not just doing it in terms of separating the population into compliers and resistors. You're actually framing them out as the good people and the enemies of the good people, the real people, the true people, the people who are with it and helping and part of the program. And we all just want to come together and get along against the enemies of the people. In other words, you're going to apply the brutal friend-enemy distinction to the entire population. Those who are going along with it are the people. Those who are resisting are the enemies of the people. And the goal is to make the big group in the middle, but actually all three groups, feel the pressure of that. So those that are in between are treated as representatives of both or either, depending on the circumstances, because the goal is to psychologically and socially pressure them into compliance and into attacking the resistors. So everything is done in the name of the people, and then everything that isn't working is blamed on the enemies of the people. That's the basic dynamic of the politics of compliance. You promise a great future, and you say, we can't have it because these people won't go along with the program. That's really it. And when things aren't working, you say it's because some people won't go along with the program. The objective of the politics of compliance is to force people to see things from the perspective that's called the people's standpoint. That means the perspective of the people who are complying. In other words, the perspective of compliance itself. So those people who have, who are complying have a particular psychology. It is the psychology of compliance. And they have the psychology of their compliance weaponized into hatred for those who refuse to comply, and even for those who just merely drag their feet or aren't sure. And they become the most savage weapon in the hands of tyrants. It's not the tyrant themselves, it's not even the tyrant's army that's its most savage weapon. It is the people who are going along with the program when they have been fed this mechanism of what I call hatecraft, borrowing from a friend of mine on Twitter, goes by classic liberal, I should say. So think about the psychology of these people. They have complied. They have done things they otherwise wouldn't have done. They've taken time out of their day and stood up for racial justice. They've bent their minds around the idea that boys can become girls and encouraged kids to mutilate their bodies. They've taken a shot that isn't even clear if it works or not. They've socially distanced. They've locked themselves in their houses. They've done all the right things. They've been recycling for years. They've done all this effort and willingly sacrificed their liberties and their time and their energy for a cause named the greater good, where the greater good happens to be defined in terms of what the regime wants. So they did so because they were promised a better future and to be recognized as a good person doing their part. But in particular, all the bad things that they have pointed out about society will stop. We can have a better future. All these terrible things like racism will end. We can get through the pandemic together. And it will all arrive when enough people comply. But the problem is, despite all of your sacrifice, remember we're looking at the psychology of compliance here. The problem is, despite all of your sacrifice, there are people who won't comply. They just won't, and they refuse to. They're terrible people. They're selfish. They're conspiracy theorists. They won't even listen to science. They are led through, in other words, the people who are complying are led through bogus promises about the potentials of the future, sometimes being visited with oppression on purpose to create the situation that they want to escape, like under COVID. The lockdowns were a political policy. We know, for example, now even the New York Times is admitting in the schools they weren't necessary, but oh, we had to get everybody, including every child, vaccinated or whatever in order to be able to open back up the schools is what they were saying. So there are these bogus promises, and the psychology of their own compliance is weaponized to hate the people who are keeping those bogus promises from being fulfilled. Take a second to appreciate how exquisite that is. The regime promises something it can't deliver, or it's abusing people in a way that it never should have been doing in the first place. And it says the promised land or the end of the abuse will come when everybody complies, and you do your part to try to get it to end, but then somebody else doesn't. And they turn that into hate by saying the reason it's not working, the reason we aren't getting the promised future, the reason we can't stop the abuse is because some people aren't going along. It's the group psychology of everybody being punished because one kid in the class won't shut up. And everybody's very mad at that kid for that in that situation. But if we take the example of the pandemic, which is, of course, the main example I gave at the International Crisis Summit, given that that's what it was focused on, and I'll just point out, we can talk about the pandemic. We have at least a dozen different dimensions we could choose from. It could be racial justice, BLM crap. It could be the queer theory, like in five different domains. It could be education stuff. It could be the politics, like in MAGA versus deplorables versus whatever. I mean, it could be so many things, right? It could be all of the environmental dimensions. Are you driving your electric car yet? Are you recycling? It could be a lot of things. We're going to take the pandemic. In the pandemic, there were those who socially distanced, they locked themselves down, they wore masks, they avoided plausible treatment courses that might have worked or might not have. They cleaned everything they owned all the time. They went through these time-consuming, expensive rituals of cleaning that don't achieve anything. And they eventually started taking experimental shots that were increasingly showing that they weren't really working, and that they were tied to their employment and they were being kind of coerced into it in various ways. And in some cases, it started to be suggested that maybe they were dangerous. They were also promised from the outset that this is going to be 2 weeks to slow the spread. Just 2 weeks. It's just going to be 2 weeks of this, which stretched out for years. And when that didn't work, when the 2 weeks didn't work, it wasn't because it was a stupid program. It was because the regime told them it didn't work because not enough people took it seriously. Not enough people did it right. So the suffering of the people, we have to keep you locked down, all of these policies, the masks, we have to wait for vaccines. The suffering of the people was caused by the totalitarian policies, but it was blamed on the allegedly selfish enemies of the people who refused to go along with this new program. Mao said that the dynamic was that we'll start with the desire for unity, we're all going to go in the same direction, and we will criticize and struggle those elements that don't go along with the new program until we arrive at a new unity on a new basis. And that's the formula behind the politics of compliance. And this dynamic multiplied through each successive stage. First, it was 2 weeks to slow the spread. Then it was clean everything and don't kill grandma. Then it was don't leave your apartment unless you absolutely have to. Then it was mask and social distance. Then it was like all these other policies. And eventually it got to where it was don't take these drugs, do take this. You know, and then it was, here comes these vaccines. And by the way, if you don't get the vaccines because this virus is so dangerous, we're going to fire you. We won't let your kids go to school. Even though there's no reason, no evidence, no even plausible reason that children need to be getting these shots. And it just multiplied through each successive stage up to the point of shots and even a float of a vaccine passport to participate in society. I went to Chicago while they had one installed, and it was ridiculous. You had to show your papers to go get coffee. And society, we were told, had to stay closed even after a year and a half because, and the reason we were given wasn't because they were doing the politics of compliance against the people. Of course, they're not going to tell us that. The reason was because too many people refused to do it. Too many people were not doing it right. Too many people refused to get their shots. Too many anti-maskers. Too many vaccine anti-vaxxers, I guess they call it. And then, of course, at the same time, there's another variant. Do you remember the news? Another variant. Oh, my gosh. And they had scientifical sounding names, and they just kept coming and coming. The people who complied had their lives completely upended, often destroyed. And even though that was the result entirely of policy choices that, in retrospect, or even at the time, most of us, many of us knew, they didn't achieve anything, it wasn't the regime's fault for deliberately mishandling the situation. It was blamed on the people who wouldn't comply with the dictates of that mismanagement. And so Mao, like I said, described the application of this formula for the politics of compliance under the structure of unity, criticism, unity. That means, he said, and this is quoting him directly, starting from the desire for unity, resolving contradictions through criticism or struggle, and arriving at a new unity on a new basis. So in the pandemic, we were told we're all in this together. That's a message of unity. We can get through this. Or we would be able to, but some among the population refuse to comply. So there's the beginning of the criticism and struggle. This is how the hate craft worked. You're doing your part, but other people aren't, and we could get over this if they would. You're doing it, but they won't. They're not masking. They're not staying home. They're not locking down. They're taking off-label drugs like horse paste. They won't get their shots. So unfortunately, the nation has to stay closed. We just have to get to 70%. Oh, no, no, no. We have to get to 80%. Oh, no, 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 no. We have to get to 90%. We actually need everybody to get vaccinated. And the people who aren't doing it need to be criticized and struggled for their selfish attitudes so that we can move forward together. And otherwise, we're going to have a severe winter of illness and death because of the unvaccinated. And if you don't remember who said that, it was the president of the United States who is pushing this agenda, these politics of compliance. The idea was that we were told we could move into a new unity on a new public health basis in which the public health authorities and eventually the World Health Organization, that's the pandemic accords that are coming up in May, will have total sovereignty over all health emergencies going forward. And only after that could things go back to so-called normal. But they won't go back to normal. They will go back to a new, better normal. They will become a new normal instead of moving into going back to normal, which is to say we will move into their tyranny on a new unity, on a new basis, through the hate craft of the politics of compliance. And so the compliant people become obsessed in these conditions. They've done their part, so other people need to do their part. Things are bad, but there's a bright future if and only if enough people, maybe it's everybody, starts to comply. Therefore, not just are the people who refuse attacked, sometimes with the backing of the state, with the backing of the press, with the backing of the entire vertically integrated messaging apparatus, but also from neighbor to neighbor. But in addition, the people who are just dragging their feet, the people who aren't sure, are pressured into high rates of compliance. At which point, because they sold their soul, they did something they actually weren't sure about and didn't want to do, many become converted into high compliant zealots who are trying to justify through their attacks on the people who aren't going along with the program their feelings about why they did and so that they didn't want to and they overcame their own fears. So in essence, the politics of compliance boils down to creating conditions where lots of people in a mass formation psychosis feel like the resistance to the agenda, the resistance needs to be crushed. And Mao said similar things. He said that the full power of the so-called people's democratic dictatorship of the proletariat was meant to be unleashed on the enemies of the people who aren't going along with his program. It would strip them of their rights to speak, their right to vote, and it could strip them of their property until such time as they complied. And like I said, the Biden administration and the majority of American state governors did this and or threatened to do exactly this to their people to the fullest extent they were able to under the law and sometimes well outside of it. That was the politics of compliance that was happening. And this is the essence of the politics of compliance. Its mechanism is primarily a relentless application of the message of hatecraft through what I call a vertically integrated messaging apparatus. I think I borrowed that term from somebody, but I don't remember where it came from. And a vertically integrated institutional array. So what's a vertically integrated messaging apparatus? That's the propaganda machine. Every institutional outlet says the same thing, often in the same words, whether it's from offices or institutions, offices of politics, institutional authorities, whether it's the media at all levels, and even education at all levels. Everybody starts saying, all of the media and important people start saying the same thing at the same time, including influencers too. There's only one truth. There's a sacred science, and we all have to agree to it or else. And so what is what I called a vertically integrated institutional array? That's similar, but it enacts the consonant policy in lockstep with that messaging, broadly, rapidly, and simultaneously, as quickly as it can be achieved. So that's going to be the CDC, the FDA, the schools of public health, the state governments, the federal government, all coming down with institutional policy, not just messaging to pressure people, but policy that aligns with that messaging and it aligns with the agenda of the hate craft or of the politics of compliance. So the people who aren't complying aren't just morally bad, they're also acting outside of what seem to be or framed to be reasonable policies. They're acting outside, in some cases, of the law. And this set of forces creates the true power of the politics of compliance. So what's the hope that's left to us here? There is a hope. And the hope is actually rather simple. A manipulation that gets exposed is a manipulation that's no longer trusted. When people can see how they're being manipulated through those tools, they don't trust the people that are doing it to them anymore. So a manipulative agency, say the CDC or the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, is an agency that's no longer trusted. Maybe it's the Biden administration. Maybe it's the state government of the state of California or the state of Michigan or something. A manipulative institution, once it's exposed, is an institution that's no longer trusted. And without trust, there's less compliance. There'll be way more people who are not just unsure of what they should do at the next thing that gets pushed on us, but they tip toward doubt. And there will be way more people who start off with a position of, oh, hell no, not again, and they start in resistance. And without sufficient compliance in the first place, without a significant big enough part of the population who complies initially and becomes the mobilized segment of the population, there can be no successful politics of compliance and it all falls apart. If they can only get a very small fragment of the population to buy into the next current thing, the next current thing doesn't get off the ground. It's that simple. So that's our role. Our role is to love, seek, share, and defend the truth. I just put out a podcast about that. You have to love the truth with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. It is to use our love of the truth to have the courage to expose the mechanisms of hate craft, these manipulations that they're doing, how it works, where you see it, and to expose the Maoist evil of the politics of compliance everywhere we see it. That allows us to chip away at the trust the institutions that are using it have currently but no longer deserve until the trust in them collapses around them and they cannot generate a sufficiently large population of initial compliers to get the next mission off the ground. It isn't just that this can be done, by the way. This is already happening. It's happening at scale. So it is our job to keep this fire of truth and liberty burning and spread it as far and wide as possible. That's how we beat the politics of compliance. All we have to do is understand them and sow distrust in the agencies that use it. Thank you for listening.